So joining us now is Bill Nottingham. He's a principal at the innovation firm Nottingham Spurk. Bill, welcome back to Innovation Navigation.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming. So you're in town this week for a conference centered on the theme of open innovation, the Marcus Evans Conference on Open Innovation. I'm sure that our listeners have heard the term open innovation, but what does it mean to you?
Open innovation is the ability for companies to look outside themselves and bring in experts to help really disrupt their own business and grow it in adjacencies and other ways. Open innovation is the concept that, you know, I don't have all the answers and other people do. And if I could find the right partner and collaborate with that person, I could really grow my business and change the world.
And open innovation, I think, can mean a lot of things. Everything from, you know, kind of a Kickstarter crowdsourcing effort to an open ideas tournament to get ideas from your customers to really just hiring firms like your firm, Nottingham Spurk. So how do we think about the range of different possibilities there?
You know, it's interesting. You think about the word closed innovation, and you think about this Fort Knox or these types of companies that just have these doors with three levels of security. And, you know, I'm sure they've been successful for a while, but what happens is they get disrupted by the little guys. And, you know, when you look at open innovation, it's those companies that are able to open their doors, create these relationships, and then work together to make a better place.
That I would imagine that's hard to convince companies to do. So you've probably walked in the door at a company. The CEO has hired you because, you know, maybe there's some implication that he's not comfortable or she's not comfortable with what the firm is putting out. And so you've got to convince those people in the middle and the line levels of the organization that opening up would be good for them. How do you do that?
Well, one thing, you know, you think of a couple tests. So when a company continues to call you a vendor, they're not the right partner. Now, when they consider us a partner and they see the value that we bring as a partner, then you know that you've got the great relationship potential. And so, you know, it is, you know, you have to empathize with the client and the partner as well, because you're right. I mean, they've got their own jobs, they got their own agenda, got their own career. And the company itself has to succeed in and of itself. So it is scary because you spend all this time developing your own culture and you think, what is this person who knows nothing about me and going to come in and do for me? And it's about that back and forth, that collaborative spirit. And it's got to be the right partner. Not anybody can do open innovation. Not any company can do it. It has to be the right people.
In my experience, though, sometimes it's the most skeptical people that turn into the biggest proponents of this or any other kind of move that, you know, they resist it because they don't see the value. But if you can convince them of the value, then, you know, they become your biggest advocates. How have you convinced those skeptics?
You know, one thing is that what we've always learned in our business is when things go wrong, that is the greatest opportunity to build your relationship. So it's not always going to be easy. But if you're able to succeed when there is a real serious challenge, then you build that relationship. It's about proving realism. It's not about proving concepts. It's about taking a dream and actually making it real.
So take us through an example. We're talking with Bill Nottingham. He's a principal at the innovation firm Nottingham Spurk. If you have questions about how to open innovation at your company, give us a call at 844-WHARTON. That's 844-942-7866. Bill, give us an example of a company that where you went in and you were given the charge of developing some new, you know, be it a medical device or a personal grooming tool or some type of appliance. I mean, you do such a wide range of things where you went into kind of a skeptical environment and had to work with that team.
Well, you know, it's funny. Actually, just this weekend, I ran into Chris Connor on a plane, and he's the CEO of Sherwin-Williams. And we actually met him on his second day in the job. And if you look at paint, you know, it hadn't changed for about 100 years. You know, we always joke around and say, if you had to use a hammer to close your milk in the morning and a screwdriver to open it, would that be something you deal with for 100 years? Well, we came to him and we said,
if you like doing that?
That's true. that's when your milk is actually stored in the hardware room, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, the thing is, we came to him on the second day and said, we'd love to find out what's missing with your package. And frankly, we found out that they had a new market in women. And so in general, the DIY looks for a more personal, pleasant experience. And so by looking at the user, we were able to uncover that you could actually create something that has a handle. It twists and pours and closes. And we created the Twist and Pour paint can with his guidance. And it was more or less a Skunk Works project where he supported us and had us basically put it in the marketplace and see how it did.
So take us into the development process for that paint can. So what did you do to get a better understanding of what people wanted from, I guess, the painting experience, right? You didn't go in to ask about cans, did you?
No, we said, what do you do? What are you used to using? And so one of the things that came up is you look at viscous liquids like laundry detergent, and you look at how that works. And it's extra interesting. If you look at the spout of a laundry spout, it pours, and then when you put the bottle back upright, it kind of pours back in naturally around that spout. And so some of the inspiration we came up with was from laundry detergent and the fact that it screws on. And so, you know, from one thing leads to the next, we found out that, you know, in one of our focus groups, we heard it's easy to open, it's easy to pour, and easy to close. You never heard that about paint for the last 100 years. It was all about how fast it dries, what the color is, and how it makes my room look. Those are great. But, you know, there's a big part of the lifestyle of the product. For example, when you buy paint, would you buy a dented can?
No.
Well, our can doesn't dent. It bounces. And so you could imagine how much dented product was returned to the shelf, but it was perfectly good paint. It's not like you're buying soup. And so our product bounced. It also had a better retail presence because it was straight. It was a square can. And so you could create this billboard nicely on the retail. And then, you know, that little red line you get when you carry a can of paint, because it's a real thin wire. Ours has a thicker plastic handle that's easier to hold. And so all these experiences and pain points of literally taking it from the shelf to the car, they never thought about before. And so it's about looking at the lifestyle process of the product.
And it was also, when I looked at the paint can on your website, and it is a cool idea, but it also seemed like you were thinking about, like, who was doing this? That there was something about your field research that led you to the importance of females and the desires of females for a paint can, not just the typical kind of, you know, guy painting the house on the weekend.
Yeah, you know, let's be honest. Everybody wants to make their rooms look better. Everybody wants to give it that fresh look, not just male contractors. So the commercial that was aired on TV was the first one that ever shown women for Sherwin-Williams. And so, you know, not that it was just about women, but it was about people. It was about people that want to use a product. And we always say innovation needs to improve your life, not dictate your life. So it needs to help you get to point A to point B, and you can move on with the rest of your day. So why do you want to spend half the time trying to open and close your paint can when you just want a nice-looking room, and you move on?
Yeah, women have the right to vote, and they can wear pants now, I think, since the 80s, right? So why not have a paint can?
No, and you know, it really was a great experience. I think
in trouble. Yeah, so... And then how did you actually, what was the barrier in that, in terms of getting that to actually work? Was it, did you have to explore different materials? I mean, does paint corrode the plastic differently than metal? Is there a reason we've been using metal all these years?
That's a great point, because you can have all these wonderful ideas, but there are going to be inherent challenges. So for example, one of the things you never anticipated was all of these shakers that are out in the market. These paint shakers hold cylindrical cans. So naturally, they'd say, oh, well, your paint can's not going to work. Well, you know what? We created an adapter. And so that was a way to solve, because you've got these old paint can shakers. Well, let's just make an adapter to make it work. You know, the other challenges are, does it spin, and does it actually mix better? Well, what was interesting, what we found is the molded-in handle, the paint was able to channel through it to splash around to the corners and mix better. So, you know, you find all sorts of inherent challenges that happen, and you solve them, because you're always going to get challenges and surprises along the way.
Now, sometimes when you open up innovation, it involves getting ideas from outside both your firm and the company you're working for. Mm-hmm. What have you learned about how to do that?
Oh, you know, it's funny. We get ideas from outside ourselves as well. So you always have to realize that you don't have all the answers, and that if you find the right partner, you can find a way to get to where you want to go. I think at the same time, you know, we always look at when we engage with companies and our partners that everybody brings something to the table, because we all have different backgrounds. So I think that the classic idea is that you never want to feel like you're the only expert, because you're not.
So give us an example of a time when you worked with a company and looked outside both of your companies to find an interesting idea for a new innovation.
Sure. So we worked with Dirt Devil Vacuums since its inception, and we were doing products for them, all sorts of vacuum cleaners, and we identified this new product coming up called the Swiffer, and this was something that was really changing everything and how people clean. And so what was interesting is, we actually helped Dirt Devil become entrepreneurial. And so we helped them. They basically licensed the name Swiffer to create the Dirt Devil Sweeper Vac. And what happened was P&G ended up acquiring the business from Dirt Devil, and Dirt Devil became a supplier for P&G to create this Swiffer Sweeper Vac. And so it was almost like a trifecta of companies there.
Did you have to convince Dirt Devil not to try and reinvent the Swiffer? I mean, did they want to come up with their own version of it?
And you know, of course. You wanted to create their own so they could actually, you know, sell those pieces. But at the same time, why reinvent something that does so well? And the fact that people already know it and it's a household name, it actually worked to their benefit. And so they kept working on the things that they're best at, vacuums. P&G did what they do best, the Swiffer pads. And it was a match made in heaven. And right now, it's the only vacuum cleaner sold in grocery stores. And you know, think about it. If you're in a marketplace with no competition, you're in a pretty good spot.
We're talking with Bill Nottingham. He's principal at the innovation firm Nottingham Spurk. And if you have questions about how to boost innovation in your company, give us a call at 844 Wharton. That's 844-942-7866. There's been a number of stories recently, Bill, about companies reaching outside and organizations reaching outside to get ideas for creative challenges that they have. The British just had a contest to name a Polar Explorer boat, and narrowly beating out It's Bloody Cold Here was the winning title, Bodie McBoatface. or Chevy hosted a campaign to create ideas to market its large SUV, the Chevy Tahoe, and what it got was a great ad, it got a series of prank ads, some comparing some saying that the Chevy Tahoe was basically a way of saying F you to the rest of the world, or hinting that a large SUV was really just compensation for small male body parts. So these things can go horribly wrong. How do you channel input from outside the company to get great ideas? How do you focus and direct it so you get what you need?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Some of those things are kind of silly, but if you think about it, if that's what the customer wants, you want to kind of direct it into that passion. You know, they always say, you know, bad news is good news. Any news is good news. Getting it out there is important. So, you know, at the same time, you know, you really have to have lots of, lots of things in the fire to make it work.
One of the things you reinvented was the home beer keg. Talk about reinventing the beer experience.
Well, you know, like you look at the environment. So when you look at beer, it's typically sold in a can. But then when you're at a restaurant, you can buy things like in a bottle or by draft. And so what we did is we said, what is missing at home? And you know, there were lots of solutions out there, like the Heineken keg, but they took up way too much space. And you know what happened? They ended up moving to the garage. So how do you create an experience that can live in the kitchen refrigerator? And so we looked at different types of things, and we said, well, a Coca-Cola fridge pack fits really nicely into a refrigerator. Can we do something that's similar to that size and work from there? And so we created something that was an on-demand beer dispenser.
And this seems to be kind of a theme for your firm, that you have the refillable disposable part attaching to some more sophisticated part that stays in the fridge. So it kind of looked like you're taking a 2-liter bottle of beer and mm-hmm. attaching it to a cool pump. Is this something, this kind of modular concept, is this something that you think you feel like you have a real capability to do?
Well, if you think of it from a business perspective, it's like the razor blade model. So let's say, you know, you're developing a system. If you develop something that could be more expensive and you have refillables, you could actually place your bets and lose a little money on the dispenser and then make it up on the back end when you sell more refills. But at the same time, you don't want the customer to have to break the bank to buy your product either. So we developed a product called the Tap King that we soft launched in Australia, and the actual dispenser itself retailed for around $19 retail. And it had a custom-built regulator inside to get it to that right price point. And it felt like a draft system. It had that metal drip tray that felt like, you know, you're actually at the bar. And so you even had these little metal tap handle tops that you can switch out if you're having different flavors of beer so you know what's inside. And so it felt, all those touch points felt like a nice product that you would expect at a bar. And so, yes, I think that, you know, developing that system, that platform, is kind of like the Keurig K-Cup model. It's a great business model, but the customer wins and the company wins.
What did you do to understand what people want from that home beer experience? I mean, how did you go out and talk to people about it?
Well, you have to, you know, you have to really try lots of things. You experiment lots of things, lots of different formats. We also had to understand, as basically, we're not the experts in beer. We don't understand how do you break it down to the parts and pieces to make it make sense, because it's obviously a very old business, old industry, and we got to come to understanding pretty quickly. And so you align with the right people and the right experts to really get there faster. But at the end of the day, it has to make sense to the user. So you got to try different things, and you will screw up a lot. But from those screw ups, you become more knowledgeable and you come up with a better solution in the long run.
And on your website, I was looking at the demonstration video for it, and they actually hired Lionel Richie, right, to sing his song. And there's practically it's this like praying to the refrigerator, and he gets this draft beer from his refrigerator, and he's just so happy. It's really a love video, right?
I could watch that commercial all day, every day for the rest of my life.
Where did that come from?
You know, it was interesting. The company in Australia is called Lion Nathan. They're a division of Kirin out of Japan. And of course, they hired Lionel Richie. And, you know, you think about it, you know, is this the beer you're looking for? Yes, it is.
That's great. Well, take us inside Nottingham Spurk. I mean, what do you think is your distinctive competence that lets you develop some of these really cool innovations?
You know what it is? It's our people. It's the people within our company, but our process is called vertical innovation, and the whole concept is people. So the fact that, you know, we say most companies do this process called horizontal handoffs, where you bring in different firms at the right time or different groups, we have this all-inclusive process of people that work together at the same time. So it's insights, it's market insights, user insights, design, engineering, biomedical, mechanical, electrical, sourcing engineers, prototype technicians, all these different specialists all working simultaneously all the way through. So there's no agendas. Everybody has a seat at the table. Everybody has a perspective that's valid. And when you look at it from that perspective, you know, the team can make great things. And so we love our partners to learn our process, but the people is what makes it magical. And so we have a great team of people. And, you know, we've got we've done things to show them that we appreciate. So, for example, our company has unlimited paid time off. That's a big deal. But it also shows that we trust our individuals and our associates as much as they would trust us. And so it's that mutual admiration, that empathy, and the talent that has to be there as well. But when everybody respects each other, you know, you challenge each other, but at the end of the day, you have great results. And you get through those challenges.
We're talking with Bill Nottingham. He's a principal at the innovation firm Nottingham Spurk. And if you have a question about how to boost innovation in your company, give us a call at 844-WHARTON. That's 844-942-7866. So say I'm a new employee. You know, I've just graduated from college, or I've worked for a while in a company doing engineering or design or something, and I come to Nottingham Spurk. What is the biggest challenge in general that your new employees have about understanding your firm, and what kind of training or, you know, how do you get them up to speed so that they're productive as quickly as possible?
You know, we're a small team of 70 people, and, you know, it's kind of like you just get thrown in. And eventually you get to understand that everybody has the opportunity to do the things that they love. And if they're successful at it, they can do more of it. It's as simple as that. You know, there's no egos. Learn to work together. Definitely have an opinion, but respect others. And, you know, as much as you can do, you can do. And, you know, if you really understand that, it really makes it a lot of fun.
So take me through the end of the year evaluation. So I'm a new engineer after my first year. What things would I have to do well to get a good evaluation, and what things might cause me to get, you know, dinged a bit?
Well, you know, we do a peer review. So you've got a 360 review of your peers. And, you know, the idea is that you always want to, you know, show what you've done well and always have things to say that you could do better. And I think it's clear that everybody has things that they can improve on. But I'll tell you what, there's nothing like hearing what others think about you to give you that kind of, give you those blind spots. And for what it's worth, everybody, you know, you get some really valuable feedback. And, you know, even our the founders of our company, John Nottingham and John Spurk, they also get peer reviews. And I'm sure they're pretty critical. I've never been in those review sessions, but, you know, I think they appreciate that because, hey, listen, we can always do better.
But I imagine that at points in your life, you've given your father helpful feedback on how he could improve.
And he's given me plenty as well.
But so take that back to, you know, your typical big or small company. Where do you think that they fall down in terms of developing and getting the best from their people?
Well, I think when you start to not appreciate or listen to your own people, I think if you keep it as an open door policy, and if you listen, I think there's, you know, once you start to forget the listening part is when you really start to lose touch with your associates, because at the end of the day, it's a team. It's not a dictatorship. And we're all better if we're all better.
You're part of this Marcus Evans Conference on Open Innovation this week. What lessons do you think that companies most need to learn about open innovation? And what could they learn from the conference?
Here's one thing I really hope is, hey, we'll be at this conference for 3 days talking about open innovation. When you go back to your job, are you still talking about open innovation? You know, it's like the brainstorm session. Everybody's all excited about brainstorming and creativity, but then when they go back to their job, are they still doing it? You know, it's one thing to talk about it. It's another thing to practice it. So I believe that most people that show up to these types of conferences do have that perspective, some of which are trying to learn, understand it, some that are trying to do it in their practice. It's a constant balance, and you have to be resilient too, because it will never be easy to do open innovation. It'll never be easy to disrupt. And sometimes you actually get disrupted yourself. And so it's this constant back and forth that makes it exciting. And I think as an innovator, we thrive in these challenges, because if it was easy, everybody would do it.
We've spent a lot of our time, both in this conversation and the previous one, talking about the kind of fun, sexy, upfront part of the innovation process, of going out and understanding customers, getting insights, coming up with new ideas, proposing them. Well, let's talk about the back end, right? So you've got a fairly defined concept, be it a better paint can or a low-end but powerful vacuum cleaner or the spin brush. How do you keep your teams focused, and how do you actually continue the problem solving? What have you learned about that back end of innovation to make that process work?
I'll tell you, there's a lot of, we just talk about like football. There's a lot of touchdowns that are never made at the 5 yard line. And I think that back end is the most important part, because that is where you can make or break your product or business. And so that's why we work very closely with factories. You know, we actually brainstorm on the factory floor. I've been lots of factories domestically and overseas, and that's where you have to either remove a part, remove a cost, and do different things to get them out there, because there are so many surprises. But that's the fun part. It's kind of, you kind of think about, it's not just fun. It's about, we like the challenge, because there will always be challenges. Nothing is ever easy. And, you have to have a good front end. You have to have a good back end. But at the end of the day, it has to be at the right cost. It's got to make business sense. It's got to make sense to the factory. Everybody has got to have a feel like they have a piece of the system.
I did a survey here with my fellow colleague George Day, and we asked people, is it harder to actually start a if you have an idea, if you have a great idea for a product, is it harder in your company to kind of get the approvals and the resources and the people to do that idea? Or is it, once you have all that, is it harder to execute and bring the idea to market? And the larger the company, the more likely people are to say it's harder to just battle your own company to get the initial approvals and resources. I would imagine that's true for you too, that once you've developed some idea and you take it back to the company, there's a lot of people that say no. How do you get past the thicket of barriers that can happen in large companies?
You have to be resilient. You have to keep coming. You have to keep working. You have to keep staying at it, because, I've heard a really great quote: failure is your decision. Think about that. It is not a failure unless you say, I've failed. And so if failure is not an option, it'll always be a success.
What were some unique or different ways that you used to persuade a company to adopt an innovation they're skeptical about?
Well, we love the concept of a soft launch, this whole concept of a minimum viable product. So, you basically set your expectations as, let's just see if we can get it to this level, this success element. And if you can get it to that, then you can scale it up. One of the things that too is, for example, talk about the spin brush. That was a product that we invented. It was a under $5 electric toothbrush. We showed it to Colgate first, and they passed on it. We said, okay, we're going to go to this other company that makes toothpaste called Crest, and we made billions of dollars with them. So, you know, if they're not ready to go to it, then we'll go to somebody else.
Mm. So we're almost out of time, Bill, but just one last thought. If you could, if you were talking to somebody who's responsible for innovation or trying to get their company to be more innovative and they want to open up their company, what's your big piece of advice on how to make that happen?
You have to be resilient. You can't, it's never going to stop. So if you got to be careful what you wish for. If you want to be innovative, you have to continue to be innovative. And it's not about like, well, we made it to the finish line. Now we can sit back, because that's when you get disrupted.
We've been talking with Bill Nottingham. He's principal at the innovation firm Nottingham Spurk. We're going to take a brief break now. When we come back, we're going to talk with Brent Bushnell. Brent is the son of Nolan Bushnell, but also he's started up this very cool company called 2-Bit Circus. So we're going to talk with Brent about what he's doing now. And Bill, could you stay on and join us for that?
I'd be happy to.